A reading from the letter of St. Paul to the Romans. Brothers and sisters, if God is for us, who can be against us? He who did not spare his own son, but handed him over for us all. How will he not also give us everything else along with him? Who will bring a charge against God's chosen ones? It is God who acquits us. Who will condemn? Christ Jesus it is who died, or rather was raised, who also is at the right hand of God, who indeed intercedes for us. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark. Jesus took Peter, James, and John, and led them up a high mountain apart by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his clothes became dazzling white, such as no fuller on earth could bleach them. Then Elijah appeared to them along with Moses, and they were conversing with Jesus. Then Peter said to Jesus in reply, "Rabbi, it is good that we are here. Let us make three tents, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He hardly knew what to say, they were so terrified. Then a cloud came, casting a shadow over them. From the cloud came a voice, "This is my beloved Son, listen to him." Suddenly, looking around, they no longer saw anyone but Jesus alone with them. As they were coming down from the mountain, he charged them not to relate what they had seen to anyone, except when the Son of Man had risen from the dead. So they kept the matter to themselves, questioning what rising from the dead meant. The Gospel of the Lord. A number of years ago, I went on a pilgrimage to Assisi with two friends of mine. Now, Assisi is the place that's associated with St. Francis of Assisi and St. Clair of Assisi. And if you've ever been there, one of the things about Assisi, which is in Italy, is there's such a sense of peace in that place. When you go to Assisi, you can feel it. You get there, and despite all of the hustle and bustle of the crowds there, you feel this wonderful sense of peace. You get this feeling like everything is great in life. It's just so peaceful. And I had been there once before, and then this time I was going with two friends of mine who both were religious brothers. And we were making our way. We had to fly to Rome, and then from Rome you take a train to Assisi. And then when you get to Assisi, usually there's places you can stay. You don't have to plan ahead. You can go there, and you can find usually a convent or a house of religious brothers, and they'll welcome visitors to stay there, and you give them a donation, and it's pretty easy to find a place to stay in Assisi. So we're traveling to Rome. We get to Rome, and you know, we're pretty tired, and one of the things we fail to do is we fail to plan out our journey very well. And we didn't really decide exactly how we were going to get there or what time we were going to take the train and all that. The other thing we failed to do is to decide who was going to be the leader of our group. It was just the three of us, but someone had to lead. And I figured since I had been there before, I should have been the leader. But what happened was my two friends didn't agree with me. And then the battle started. And we couldn't agree on what train to take, when to leave, and who was in charge. And I was saying, "Look, you got to do this, you got to do that, you got to do this." Nobody wanted to listen to me. And we got in a fight. So here we are, we're religious brothers. I'm a priest and two religious brothers, and we're supposed to be a role model for Christianity, and we don't like each other one bit. Can you relate to that? You go on vacation with family and friends, and after day one, you're like, "Man, I can't wait till this is over," you know? But we were on a 10-day pilgrimage, and on day two, we didn't like each other anymore. We were at war, going to the place of peace, and it was so, we didn't fight each other physically, but We exchanged some words and some nasty looks, and we get to the train ride to Assisi, and one of the brothers was so mad at me that he was wrong, by the way, just so you know. It's true, I'm telling you. So he was so mad at me that when we got on the train, he went on a different section of the train. And then the other brother was mad at the other guy for doing that. So he sat kind of near me, but not right next to me. And he was just angry the whole time, wouldn't say a word. And I'm thinking to myself, this thing is a total disaster. And so we get to Assisi and we get off the train and then the train leaves. And me and the one brother who were on my section of the cart are looking for the third guy who went on another cart. Where is he? And the train already left. And he forgot to get off the train. I was like, yes, you know? And the other brother was panicking now, right? So I'm like, this thing is, everything that could go wrong is going wrong. So we don't know what to do. And then finally the train comes back and our so-called friend, he actually stayed on the train and they brought him back. And so we're back together again. We still don't like each other. But then a new problem showed up. The new problem was, we didn't know this, but it just so happened that the day that we were going there, there was a international convention of Franciscan friars in Assisi. And there were over 2,000 Franciscan friars there. And you know what that meant? There was no place to stay, because the friars had taken all the places to stay overnight in Assisi. So we're walking around, we're all mad at each other, and we can't find a place to stay. And we're thinking, you know what? We just better get back on the train and head back to Rome and forget about this whole trip. So then I'm like, okay, what could God do? Can God help us? And so we're like, maybe we should pray and ask God for help. So we're walking along, and I saw this convent, and there was an elderly nun working on some flowers outside. And something in my heart said, we're going to stay there. I know it. And mind you, we had gone from convent to convent, hotel to hotel. We kept getting turned away because there was no room available. And I said, we're going to stay here, guys. And they're like, how do you know that? I said, I just feel it. So I approached the nun and I told her who we were and what we're going to do. And they said, we got one room for 3 people left and you can stay here. So can you imagine this? We had one room for 3 people and we all hate each other, you know? So we said, we better reconcile before we go into this room. And so we spent our time there and we finally became friends again. We still remember what happened between us, but I still think I was right, but that's another conversation. And we're friends to this day, so it all worked out in that regard. But here's what happened after that. We had this place to stay, and it worked out perfect because we had a place for 3 people, and they fed us too, which is always helpful. And then we went to the Basilica for St. Francis of Assisi, and there's this basilica, and inside there's a little church that St. Francis had built. And they have preserved it to this day. And if you want to say Mass there, you have to jump through some hoops and, you know, basically sign up for it well in advance. And we never did that, but we were there and a sacristan came out and said, come, say Mass for us. And I was like, wow, we never could do this before. And we were able to do it. And then the pilgrimage became really, really, really good pilgrimage. And it was really holy time. And I had 3 words that came to me at the end of the pilgrimage. I had these words, God will provide. God will provide. And when we tried to do our own thing, we ended up fighting each other. When we tried to do our own will, there was no peace. But once we just said, let's turn to God and see what he does, and let's trust in him, God provided. And I think that's the lesson that we all need to try to accept. And the reason why I bring it up in the context of today's Mass is in our second reading, St. Paul says something like this. He says, if God is for us, who can be against us? He who did not spare his own son, but handed him over for us all, how will he not also give us everything else along with him? The Apostle Paul had this sense that God would provide for us. And so he said, I got to tell people this message that God's going to provide. Now, in today's gospel, we hear this story about the transfiguration of Jesus, when he appears in glory, when he appears as having the victory already over evil, sin, and death, where he shares that glimpse of glory, glorious victory in heaven with his friends, Peter, James, and John. It's like Jesus gave them a glimpse of what the end of the road is going to be like if you're faithful to him. We're going to win, and it's going to be beautiful, eternal life in heaven. So these apostles had this experience of God providing. It's like in the midst of the transfiguration, they probably felt that God's taking care of everything. But then after the transfiguration, they're going to face the loss of many things in their life. So if you look at the stories of Peter, James, and John after the transfiguration and after the death and resurrection of Jesus, they experienced a lot of trouble in their lives. Peter ended up getting unjustly imprisoned many times, and he was crucified. He died a horrible death. And then you look at St. James, who wrote one of the letters in the Bible, and he was arrested, and he was thrown off the top of the temple in Jerusalem, and he died. And then you look at St. John, who was present at the Transfiguration also, and he ended up being exiled on some island for many, many years. Now, if you went through those things, you would be like, how does God provide? I thought God provided for us. And we saw in the Transfiguration that it's all going to work out. We even saw it in the resurrection of Jesus that it's all going to work out. And now we're losing everything. Well, the thing is, if you read the writings of these apostles who experienced so much trouble in their lives, you wouldn't discern in them people who were discouraged or despairing. You would listen in their writings to people who believed with all their hearts that God provides. St. Paul the Apostle, who was arrested many times and beaten many times, he says that in this letter. He says, God's going to give us everything that we need. So how do we go through the loss of many things in our own lives and still have this belief that God will provide? Well, I think what we have to do is we have to have a strong faith in the glory of Jesus. You see, when he was transfigured, he showed his glory to his friends. He showed them that he's got all the power, that no matter what's going to happen to him when he suffers the cross and death, he's still got all the power. He's showing them heaven itself. And we have to believe in heaven. You know what heaven is? Heaven is when every good thing we have lost is restored to us forever, forever and ever. Now, I know that every one of us in our life's journey, we experience one loss after the next. It's a kind of situation that in life you have to learn to live with. But we have to believe in heaven. We have to believe that Jesus Christ is victorious over every loss that he experienced, and he can be victorious over every loss that we experience. If we stay united to him, then we're united to his victory over any loss. And so, brothers and sisters, as we move to the season of Lent, I think it's a good time for us to really renew our belief in the glory of Jesus in heaven, to really believe that if we're faithful to him, what are we moving towards? We're not moving towards more loss in our life. We're moving towards glory. We're moving towards everything that we have lost in life being restored to us. Dear brothers and sisters, in the Transfiguration, Jesus reveals to us a lesson that we need to learn again and again. And that's no matter what we go through, God provides. And God will provide for what we need. And what he provides for us will be given to us forever and ever.